The Premier League is back with a bang. Hello and welcome to the Real Football Cast. I'm your host Dan Tracy, and in the next 45 minutes I'll once again be dissecting through all the hot topics in football. After the success of last week's show, in which we had record listeners, well, considering it was the first full-length show, I guess it had to be really, we're going to do it all over again tonight. Again, the aim is to separate all the footballing week from the chaff, as on this episode we look back on the opening weekend of the Premier League season. In addition to that, we'll be wrapping up the dealings of the domestic transfer market and just about anything else that springs to mind. Thankfully, I'm not going to be doing it alone, so there are no concerns about having to listen to me waffle on for the next 45 minutes. So joining me tonight, I have two real football men, and after having such good fun last week, I'm joined by the same two which helped me out last time around. First up is Carl Gwilliam. Carl, I hope you're well and took in a lot of football over the course of the weekend.
Yeah, it was great, wasn't it? Football's back. That's what I've been waiting for, those weekends where you have to go and do something with the missus because there's nothing to watch or nothing on telly. It was brilliant to have all that football back. I don't think she was too pleased because Sky was on basically most of the weekend. And it was a good weekend of football, so a great way to start.
Yep, no need for shopping for soft furnishings or anything like that. The football is well and truly back. And also well and truly back is James Leverbarrow, or JS for short. JS runs the excellent Football in the City website. And like you, mate, I hope you've watched as much football as humanly possible. And I hope you've been well also.
Very well, thank you, Dan. Thanks for having me on. It's kind of great, and it isn't, to have the Premier League back. You know, I'm kind of missing the World Cup a little bit, but yeah.
Don't worry, mate. It's only 4 years away. There's still time.
Yeah, I know.
Don't just count yourself.
Counting down the days to the Euros.
Two years then. That will cover the gaps. We might have the Nations League to sort of fill the gap, but I don't think it's quite the same, is it? We might have to cover that in International Week. But anyway, I best do some social media bits, otherwise I'll be talking to the abyss once more. First, if you want to get in touch with me, you can on Twitter, at DanTracy1983. It would be great to get some listeners' questions. We will get some 1 week. Apologies we haven't got any at the moment, but it is what it is. Any activity is also welcome, so you know, if you've got any opinions or anything, I should really start some fan polls soon. Get some more debate sort of going, so that's my fault being a bit lazy this week. But, you know, like I say, any opinions, get in touch to me. Twitter will be one of the places to find the show each week. You can also find it predominantly at realfootballcast.com. From there, there are the links that you can direct download or stream to your device. So if you want to run it off your phone, tablet or desktop, you can find links there. And also SoundCloud or Audio Boom. iTunes is still a work in progress because the function to submit a podcast is broken, so it just goes to show that nothing is perfect. And I'm also looking for a sponsor for the show. Well, I try and find one. You can help me out at buymeacoffee.com/realfootball. There, if you like what you hear and you've just got a couple of sort of quid in change or something, then chuck it my way and it is going to be much appreciated because it helps with all the running costs behind the scenes. So then, it's time to go live. And the best place to start is the Premier League. But one quick matter off the pitch. Now, me and Carl spoke about this podcast burning subject on another one last night. So I'll spare him of reliving his views once more and he doesn't have to get on his soapbox. But JS, you're a Tottenham fan also. So how well or how badly have you taken the news that Tottenham are going to have to take their return back home?
To be honest, I'm not as fussed as I've seen quite a lot of people be about it. Admittedly, not a big fan of going to Wembley. You know, you miss sort of going in the Bricklayers or whatever before the games at the Lane. But to be honest, it's a massive project, isn't it? You know, I mean, what building works do sort of generally run on time? You know, it's such a huge thing that they've done in, what, little over 2 years, really. So I'm sort of a bit more forgiving on it than, you know, quite a lot of people. And fundamentally, if the stadium's not safe for people to go into, why would you risk people's lives just to sort of shut up a minority on Twitter who don't like it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just incredibly bad timing, isn't it? I don't think poor timing is the word, because I think it is unfortunate, but in the maelstrom of Tottenham not signing anyone. This is the last news they need to break. Do you not think?
I mean, again, I was fairly indifferent about that as well, because it's like we've finished in the top three seasons running with predominantly exactly the same squad, only we've added actually a genuinely decent wing option in Lucas Moura. We've signed an exceptional centre-back in Davinson Sanchez within that period. And most of our squad are really young and getting better. We had 9 World Cup semi-finalists. Ideally, we would have had more depth. That, I mean, I don't think anyone's going to argue about that. But by the same token, I don't suddenly see why there's all this doom and gloom. Because if you think about it logically, we've still got a really, really good team that is already top three, top two, and certainly top four ready. I don't think Arsenal have strengthened enough. Chelsea, it depends how quickly, what's his name, Sarri can sort of turn them around. I think we're going to be all right this season. You know, I don't think it's going to be the disaster that everyone's making out, because if you think about it, a lot of the people who are panicking were exactly the same ones when Everton was spending all the Lukaku money last summer, saying, oh God, Everton are going to overtake us. And you just think, no, that's just not going to happen. We've got a settled, good, strong team and a fairly decent squad. So I think we're going to be all right. So again, I wasn't bothered about that. The stadium's a bit of a pisser, but it's not the end of the world. It's a huge project. It's been delayed by a few months. So what, you know?
Yeah, I mean, time will tell on both the stadium and the playing front. But let's focus on matters on pitch now. As we mentioned last week, the key clash was always going to be Arsenal at home to Manchester City. And City picked up where they left off. Carl, would you say that Unai Emery's tactics played into the defending champions' hands?
I think that was, I mean, we said that it would be a tough fixture for Arsenal to start the season. That's probably the worst fixture they could have got, wasn't it? If you're a new manager, you don't want to play Man City, first of all, because you'd like to get off to a really good start at home. But I was surprised at how dominant City were in that first half and generally for the whole game, because there was only one team winning that game, and City looked like they took their foot off the gas a little bit in the second half, which probably wouldn't have gone down too well because it only would have taken one goal to let Arsenal back in it. But Arsenal would have hated that game, and you looked like the same old, you know, failings that they have were there, weren't they? They didn't, you know, credit to the young guy in midfield, that they, you know, David Luiz lookalike, because he never shied away from getting the ball, did he? You know, a few mistakes, but he always wanted the ball. He was always willing to stick a tackle in and try and get them going. And yeah, they just didn't really have enough about them, and they didn't really ever look like massively troubling City unless City played themselves into trouble, which they nearly did, obviously, from the keeper. The one thing that's surprised me was, if you look at Mahrez and Walker down that side, I mean, they could tear teams apart this year, because, I don't know, Walker's played at a World Cup, but he's got quicker. I mean, he was, some of the runs he was making and the ground he was covering at the speed he was going for them attacks, you'd have no chance of stopping that this year with Mahrez starting to cut inside and him overlapping. You just felt, you know, Aguero should square for De Bruyne to tuck one in and make it 3-0. But yeah, they were just far too strong for Arsenal, and they've brushed, you know, aside that people weren't sure how Arsenal were going to do this year, and City really brushed them aside quite convincingly in the end. So I don't think you can judge Arsenal on that one game. You know, not many teams are going to get anything against City. But now the hope is that they really need to get something out of that next game against Chelsea, because they don't want to start going 2-3 games before getting the first win under the new guy, because then we'll start seeing the Emery out Arsenal fan TV chance, won't we, already?
I already have. I saw a genuine tweet that was, get Emery the fuck out of my club. He should have played Torreira and blah, blah, blah. And why is he playing an old geriatric in goal and all this is clueless? You just think, mate, it's one game.
Yeah, He's going to take him as well a couple of transfer windows, isn't it?
You know,
he needs a little bit of time to like clear out the deadwood that's there and bring in faces and get his way of playing across. I mean, at least you could see that they were trying to potentially push up and be a little bit more aggressive. But you're just doing it against a team that not many teams are going to have much joy with, no matter what they try and do this year. We said it last week. The only team, I think, who don't fear Man City is Liverpool. Everyone else will just be thinking, if we can get a draw or something here, and you know, or even if we lose, it's 1-0, then we'll be happy with that.
Yeah, I think Liverpool will certainly feel they've got City's number and can certainly, you know, get him on the ropes. And that's something we'll touch on in a minute, just after we've summed up this game. But JS, for you, in terms of Unai Emery, does he have to be admired for sticking to his guns in terms of his system? Because you could tell sometimes when they were attempting to play from the back, it was causing more sort of problems. Like, it almost seemed a burden at times. Or should he thought to himself, do you know what? This isn't working. Time to mix it up.
I think without wanting to get too sort of Big Sam on the issue, but I do admire it. He's trying to stamp what everyone calls a philosophy on the club and is starting as he means to go on. However, sometimes you just have to be a little bit savvy in game. If that's not working and you're just getting pressed and you're losing the ball too quickly high up the pitch, leading to opportunities for probably, if not the most dangerous attack in the country, you know, maybe Liverpool aside, certainly the second, you know, it's criminal to do it. At that stage, you just have to try something else. Just clear the ball, get rid of the danger. Don't put yourself under unnecessary pressure and just get on with it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Carl, in terms of goalkeeper personnel for Arsenal, Petr Cech almost scored the own goal of the season on the opening Sunday of the campaign. So how surprised were you that he got the nod ahead of Bernardino? Now, I know JS said he was a big fan of him last week, but I was certainly surprised that it wasn't the new signing that was in between the sticks.
Yeah, maybe he's just thought there, he wants that experience, and maybe he's helping the new guy, because, you know, imagine if you play him in that game and City go out and romp you, then having that sort of first game where you've conceded a load of goals doesn't help your confidence to start with.
Yes,
so maybe he just thought, I'll stick that more experienced guy in who's been there, seen it and done it. But when that camera panned back, because no one actually saw it, did they, on the telly? All of a sudden, they cut away to a picture of a player, and you've kind of heard, oh, look back, and it's like, what's gone on here? And when you actually see what Cech nearly does, you're just thinking, what are you doing? What are you thinking? So maybe he just thought he'd keep him out of that game, because, you know, there possibly was only going to be one result, so why ruin the guy in his first game? And now you might see him bring him in. I think it could be a bit like Conte, couldn't it, with Emery at the moment. He might try to stick with what's there at the moment and work around it. But like Conte did at Hull, the season Chelsea won the league, he got to a point where he had to say, do you know what? I'm going to the formation I normally stick with and the way I normally want to play. And I'm not going to try and suit what players are here. I'm going to do it my way and I'm going to do it how I want to do it. And I think it won't be long before we maybe see Cech come out of that side
I remember that season. Didn't he basically just nick our formation and tactics and then apply it to Chelsea didn't they lose like 3 or 4 nil to Arsenal?
Yeah, that they kind of had a bad run of results, didn't they? And then it led to them going a whole way. And he obviously just said, well, do you know what? I'm gonna play the formation I've been playing at Juve in Italy. And then it just suddenly didn't it?
Was he playing a 4-2-3-1 there?
Yeah, because I think a few people thought that Poch copied him when he started doing it.
It's really
funny, because like Conte's the first manager who ever thought of a 3-5-2. You know, there were managers playing it years and years ago. But I think Emery will be a bit like that. He's probably gone in thinking, I'm not gonna rip everything apart straight away. But I think we'll gradually see him start to stamp his authority and the way he wants to play. A bit like JS there. The one thing, we're all Spurs men, and the one thing I think we've done the last few times we've gone to play City at their place is, before you know it, we're trying to play balls out to a man from a goal kick on the edge of the box when he's already being marked by a striker. And you're just thinking, You're giving it to them on the edge of our own penalty box wondering why they're getting chances. Stick it long. At least get the ball up and in their half, and then you start to defend from there, really, rather than suddenly you're on the back foot inside your own penalty box. And when you've got people like Sterling and Aguero running at you, you don't need to be there. Just get it away.
Absolutely not.
Well, yeah, exactly. You don't need to be making it any easier for likes Man City, because it's easy enough as it is. But if we move on to Anfield, and as Cole said, that he doesn't maybe sort of fancy Liverpool for the title, but it'll certainly push their City closer. They ran right over West Ham. And JS, they've sort of picked up, I wouldn't say where they left off, because the last game really was they losing to Real Madrid, but they've shaken off that disappointment and they look pretty strong, don't they?
Yeah, I think so. Actually, you know, it's funny you praised it like that, because within about the first 10 minutes, I thought exactly the same thing. It almost looks like they haven't had a summer break and they've just sort of carried on mid-full flight. They look brilliant, to be honest. Can they maintain it over the course of a season and challenge City? I'm not 100% sure they can, but they do look very, very strong. I mean, West Ham, no, just no. I mean, they sort of looked all right, didn't they, up until they went 2-0 down. And then after that, it was just no chance, you know.
Yes, I mean, with West Ham, the expectations have been raised, rightly or wrongly, because of they've brought in Pellegrini, made a lot of signings. But that defeat, Carl, it's not really the game where you learn anything about them, because they're not really expected to win that. It's a free hit, but at the same time, an opening day defeat or opening weekend defeat of that nature is incredibly demoralising, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you said exactly what I've got a West Ham mate, and after the game, he was kind of a little bit disappointed. But again, he was the same as you, Dan. He was saying, it was kind of a free hit, because we know we ain't going to go there opening day and probably get a result. But we actually didn't want to lose 4-0. You know, if we'd lost 2-1 or 2-0, 1-0, then you could come away going, well, OK, that's not a bad start. You know, we weren't expected to beat these and we've given them a game. The scoreline and the manner of the win kind of makes you think, oh, actually, they had some big hopes, but they were looking dreadful, especially defensively at times.
Do you know what the weird thing was, actually? I thought they actually, for large parts of the game, actually did well to restrict Liverpool's chances. It was just, for the goals, they just seemed to switch off for pretty much all of them. You know, I mean, apart from maybe that first Salah goal, which was just beautifully worked, to be honest.
I mean
I don't think there are many teams probably in world football who would have been able to defend against that, but actually I thought they looked all right. I thought they contained them fairly well. They just had those lapses in concentration that cost them very dearly. I actually thought it was a little bit harsh, 2-0 at half time, but then if you switch off, you're going to get punished against teams like that. And that's the thing, you know, I think that's what marks out a lot of the top sides and a lot of the top players. They seem to have those incredible levels of concentration that mean they can go 90 plus minutes without conceding any chances, you know, whereas West Ham just don't seem to have that sort of ability in their locker. I mean, you know, Fabianski, she had a pretty decent game, given that he was on the wrong side of the rubbing, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
he made really decent saves.
I think West Ham will feel their season starts this weekend, won't they?
Yeah.
I mean, for them, it was like, well, we're going up there. If Liverpool play the way everyone's thinking they're going to play, we're not expecting to come away with anything. So actually, our season starts this weekend when we're playing a team now that we now will see, are they going to actually progress from what they have been and start making the step up? So I think
that's
too worried.
Do you know what? I know it sounds a bit weird given that it's West Ham Bournemouth, but I'm actually quite looking forward to that one, because I think it'll be a kind of good marker as to where both of those clubs are at, you know, because Bournemouth have done really well the last four seasons, whatever it is. I think that will be very interesting to see where they're both at now.
I was going to ask a question about Bournemouth later, but now you brought them up, we might as well push them up the order. And the question is, JS, Eddie Howe is now the longest serving Premier League manager after Wenger's departure from Arsenal. Was it 6 years or so? When is he going to move up the managerial hierarchy? You know, when can you see him really, if at all, getting a bigger job in inverted commas? Or is he always going to be overlooked by foreign managers because it's a more sort of classier option?
I mean, maybe he's sort of like seen what's happened to a few others, you know, like Moyes going to United or, you know, whatever else. And maybe he's sort of thought, do you know what? I might actually just stay at Bournemouth and see what I can build here. You don't know, you know what I mean? It's like maybe he wants to see, a bit like Nigel Clough's done at Burton Albion for years, you know? He might see what he can get out of Bournemouth. I mean, maybe he'll want a different challenge. But I don't honestly see any real reason for him leaving yet. I mean, for whatever reason, like you've just alluded to, the top clubs like Chelsea or United or City or whoever it is, there's a sort of merry-go-round of those very top managers. I think we spoke about this last week, but there are only certain clubs that they can go to, and it's always going to be them. And then you've got other managers, although Kovac just got the Bayern job, but Tuchel got PSG. But you know what I mean, and Pochettino's probably the next on the list, isn't he, for, you know, if he ever does decide to leave Spurs, he'd be the one that those top clubs would then go to afterwards. But after Mourinho finally falls out with everyone at United, he'll go to PSG or Bayern or whatever else, and Pep Guardiola will go to, I don't know, maybe back to Barca or to PSG or whoever. And so it completely limits the opportunities that people like Eddie Howe get, who are really good young managers. The same thing happened with Gareth Southgate before he got the England job. He sort of worked his way through the system there. No one seems to want to take a punt on, like you say, it's almost like it's not sexy to hire those kind of managers, because even us now, if Poch goes, you'd think, do you know what, Eddie Howe would be a decent manager, he might bring a bit of heart to the club, you know, but he won't, because Levy, or, you know, if we've been sold by them, they won't. They'll look around Europe and they'll hire, because I think we've reached that level now with the new stadium and, you know, constant Champions League football and so on, that we'll just hire someone like Sarri or, you know, Emery or whoever next, won't we? And I think it's a shame. So I don't think it's necessarily even will he decide to. It's will he even get the opportunity to, you know?
Yeah,
I think there's some poison chalices, isn't it?
Yeah,
I agree. Thinking his next job, you kind of think his next step up could possibly be at a club like Newcastle. Mm. If Benitez goes, that could be a club. But again,
is that a step up with Mike Ashley in charge? You know,
that's the problem, isn't it? You'd think size of club, it's a step up, but when you're working under those sort of restraints, and as well, he would have to think to himself, if I get this job that people think is a step up and it goes wrong, then I'm never getting another opportunity again.
Because that's a higher level, exactly.
Yeah, he'll never get anything bigger. If he goes to a bigger club and he doesn't go right, then he's back down to a Championship manager or always a struggling relegation.
Right, a bit like Chris Coleman, even though he did a really great job at Fulham, he actually did a very decent job with Wales, went to Sunderland, and now is in League One.
And no one won't be fighting to get him, will they? If he leaves there,
well, he's unemployed, isn't he?
None of the top clubs would suddenly be.
Well, yeah, sorry. I mean, not him, but what I mean is,
yes,
that's what happened. Sorry, yeah, my.
No, it's alright. That's fine. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
I think he went to China, didn't he?
Yes, High Bay Fortune, isn't it? I think he's now managing.
That's it. Great shout. Yeah,
Javier Mascherano is part of his squad. So it's football bizarre, isn't it?
Chris Coleman, brilliant. Fulham, Wales with Ramsey and Bale and all of those, and now he's managing Mascherano. Brilliant.
Football is a funny old game, isn't it, as they say. Moving across London, or I don't know where we are actually, geography, but we're in Chelsea. So Chelsea got off to a winning start away at Huddersfield. One that perhaps you'd expect. I mean, they look good from the Match of the Day highlights. I mean, I know it's sort of 10 minutes, but unfortunately I'm not in a position where I can watch sort of 900 minutes of football across the weekend. But Cole, Maurizio Sarri will certainly be pleased that Chelsea look a lot better than they did the week before in the Community Shield.
Yeah, definitely. A potential banana skin fixture there, isn't it? You know that Huddersfield are probably going to be up for it. And the first 10, 15 minutes of that game, but they kind of were, you know, you could see Huddersfield were putting themselves about and, you know, you could start thinking, well, they've started well, but Chelsea just got the game under control and then they just took over. And once they got those couple of goals, they just wore Huddersfield down. And everyone has kind of tipped that Huddersfield may have a struggling year this year, but Chelsea ended up that game looking comfortable. But there'll be tougher tests to come for them, you know. So again, it's a bit like Emery; they'll be happy with that start, but we won't really know how well Chelsea could do until maybe 10 or 12 games have been played and they face some stiff opposition. Because yeah, it was kind of polar, wasn't it? Against Man City, it could have been 5 or 6, and then they win quite convincingly and look reasonably decent. But it was against Huddersfield. No disrespect to Huddersfield, but they won't really cause a team like Chelsea trouble, even when they're in kind of crisis mode, as Chelsea always seem to be. So they'd be happy with that. You know, three goals and a clean sheet. You can't ask for a better start than that, really, can you? But there'll be tougher tests ahead, and we'll really see what Chelsea are made of under the new guy.
Well, you mentioned earlier, one of those tougher tests will be this coming weekend against Arsenal. Now, when Conte was a manager, I think he only beat Arsenal once in 8 matches. So, for Sarri, is this an opportunity to really lay down a marker? Not just to sort of say, you know, I've arrived in the Premier League, but also, that's already a 6-point gap over Arsenal in the league.
I think they'll actually beat Arsenal.
Yeah, I think they will.
I just think they'll be too strong for Arsenal again. And obviously, they'll have Hazard probably starting the game. And yeah, I just think they'll be too strong for Arsenal, and I can see them winning that game. And yeah, as you say, that'll be a nice 6-point buffer already, won't it? Against the teams, they're two of teams that everyone's probably saying will be fighting for that fifth or fourth place. So to get 6 points over them and in a psychological edge as well early on would be very nice.
Yes, it could be very important. It's the kind of fixtures that Arsenal don't want. I mean, one sort of train of thought is you get them out of the way early, but if you're giving 6-point head starts, you're giving yourself a lot of work to do as well. So the ramifications in defeat come Saturday could be big for Arsenal. But JS, going back to Saturday's game, obviously they were away at Huddersfield, and after the game David Wagner said he was happy with the team's performance. Now, you think, so if you just lost 3-0, I guess there's no real shame in that when you lose to Chelsea, but what have they got to do to avoid second season syndrome?
Good Lord. I actually have them tipped to go down this year, so it sounds horrible.
Someone's got to go down, so it's not, you know.
I don't think they are gonna avoid it, to be honest, mate. I think,
well, that's fine. Not everyone can, so you know.
I think they're going down, and to be honest, I don't think there is much that they can do about it. I actually think Fulham and Wolves are gonna stay up. You know, Wolves look good already, but Fulham also, I think when their whole side gels, I think they're going to be fine as well. I think, yeah, I'm not sure, unless they suddenly get taken over by, you know, a billionaire who falls in love with Yorkshire and they suddenly start signing, you know, like Ronaldo and Messi in the January transfer window. I think, yeah, there's nothing they can do, to be honest. I can't see who they're going to be bringing in that's going to make enough of a difference in the second half of the season, you know. Quick note on Chelsea. I was actually, despite having a, you know, as a Spurs fan, having a deep-seated loathing of them in general, I was actually really delighted to see that, you know, the tactical revolutionary finance merchant Sarri actually brought that into the Premier League, because I was wondering if he was going to do it or not. And he has. He's brought the 4-3-3, restrict space. It's glorious. And it was interesting to see Jorginho sitting a bit deeper, allowing Kante to go further forward, because I assumed it would be the other way around, with Kante sort of anchoring in front of the defence and sort of allowing Jorginho a bit more free reign, but it was the other way around, and that was the only really surprising thing. But yeah, so they're my thoughts on the game. But yeah, I'm quite excited to see that in the Premier League, and Huddersfield are going down.
Well, I think I mentioned to my friends in the week that N'Golo Kante will probably be deployed more of a sort of box-to-box midfielder this season. I think you will see him getting forward more because of the signings that have, or the signing that has been made in midfield. So that might be adding an extra element to his game. And also from a fantasy football point of view, at 5 million, it could be a bit of a bargain. But I didn't tell you that. So,
yeah, but you know what I mean. When you look at those two players... You know, Jorginho and Kante, I don't know how to pronounce Jorginho.
Yeah, that's fine.
I don't know, it's one of those. I really assumed it would be the other way around, whereas Kante, like you say, seems to be the one who's getting forward a bit more, almost like a box-to-box thing. It is great, actually. I'm enjoying it so far. They play good football. And yeah, you're right. I mean, Huddersfield, but it was away, could have been a tricky game, and they looked very fluid again. And they seem to have early signs of being pretty much revitalised under Sarri. So there you go, Sarri and his smoking room, if the rumours are to be believed.
Yeah, well, yeah, because he's not allowed to smoke on the touchline, which you are allowed to do in Italy. So that was one of the sticking points when he first moved. But, you know, you can't have it all as a big money manager, can you?
Well, did you hear that? Apparently they're getting him a smoking room inside the club. Yeah, really, because it's got... they reckon he's got somewhere between a 60 and 80 a day habit. Wow. So, which is pretty good, given that he's a football coach. I mean, I probably smoke in that region, but I'm a football writer.
It's not quite the same, is it?
I don't need to be in peak condition.
No, you don't.
It's my fingers on a
game. He always looks like he's just walked out of Sports Direct, though, doesn't he? You can't see him ever looking smart on the touchline, can you?
Which is weird, it's like an ex-merchant banker, isn't it? And he just goes around in tracksuits. Maybe that's the merchant banker trend in Italy. I don't know. High fashion for merchant bankers in Naples, you know.
There we go. You mentioned that, well, you feel that Huddersfield will go down. Part of that reason, as you've also said, is that because Fulham and Wolves are chucking big money at it, and that just makes the job even harder, even if you are a team that's already had a crack at the Premier League and it's succeeded first time around. So one of the games involving those promoted teams was Wolves versus Everton Cole. Two teams that spent big over the summer, you know, Wolves coming up, Everton trying to get higher up the table. Whether they can crack that, I don't know. It was an entertaining 2-2 draw in the lashing rain at Molineux. The talking point of the game, undoubtedly, was the sending off of Phil Jagielka. Now, for you, was that a red or a yellow?
I would have to say, obviously, in today's sort of what you get for a red card today, then I don't think there were too many complaints, really. You know, the studs are high. Oh, well, ankle, but the studs are up going to the ball. He goes over it. So I think today you have to accept that sort of tackle now. You are running that risk of getting a red card for that, aren't you? So I think it was just one of them. It's unfortunate, but yeah, I don't think you can have too many complaints. He does go over it. He does catch the guy nastily. So, you know, that was one of them. I think you will see plenty of red cards for those sort of tackles this year. And he's just the first one. And it's just a shame for them it was early, because Everton started off looking quite bright, didn't they, in that game, and then got the lead, and did well, actually, once they had were down a man, to then get ahead, because Wolves are playing some decent stuff, and they do look like they'll be a real handful this year, especially at Molineux. And I'm just glad to see Wolves back, especially at Molineux, because that's a great ground and a great club. And it's about time we saw them back in the big time.
Yeah, I mean, look at the team they put out on Saturday. JS, they're going to be doing, I wouldn't say big things perhaps, but they're going to upset the apple cart, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. You know, if they can sort of... I mean, they did make a lot of signings. Obviously, they already had some, you know, excellent players like Ruben Neves and all the rest of it. And I like... what's his name? Spiritu Sancti. It sounds like the Catholic prayer baptism thing from The Godfather. But yeah, I like him. He's a good manager. I I'm going to sort of say they've got a half outside chance at Europe this year. I think Fulham, I thought they were going to look a bit better than they did, if I'm being honest, and I don't see them beating Spurs next game, so I think they're going to be about 14th. But yeah, I would not be surprised to see Wolves somewhere between 7th and 10th this year.
Yeah. You know? I reckon so.
I think I read somewhere that they've got a 5-year plan, the owners, haven't they, where they want to try and win the Premier League in 5 years. And Jesus. the way they've started off, you can see they are actually going to try and achieve that target.
Chew them going straight down again this year. Then.
Yeah, right.
I wonder if that was part of the plan. Just test the waters for a year. Yeah. This league's easy. We'll just hang around in the Championship for a bit just to show off.
The thing is, though, you can make... If you've got a lot of money behind you, it's not obviously a hard and fast rule, but you can see Wolves making big strides quickly. So they might get they might get top half this season, and everything's progress. Well, they could even, you know, and then next season it's top seven. But then you sort of hit a logjam, don't you? And then it's like, right.
Leicester did it.
Yeah, they did, obviously, but that was...
They actually spent quite a bit of money. I mean, I know it's relative compared with, like, City or United or Chelsea, but they did actually spend a fair bit, Leicester.
At the same time, though, they've not sustained that. So can you see the next 5 years, let's say Wolves an example, can you see this sort of glass ceiling being sort of shattered and a new club such as Wolves puts everyone's noses out of joints, and the landscape of the Premier League has changed forever? Is this the sort of the golden goose? This is going to really ruin football.
Yeah,
football as we know it, but mix things up.
Did Leicester do it?
Well, they did, but like I say, they're not sort of sustaining, are they? They've come back down. They've found more natural levels.
I see what you mean. So if someone kind of upsets the apple cart and starts winning or cracking the top three, top four season on season, right? I see what you mean. I mean, I think the TV money's helped level things out a bit, hasn't it, for sure? There's definitely more commercial revenue, so even more than ever, you just need to look at what Liverpool is spending at the moment to see that. Yeah, why not? I mean, I still have an inkling Spurs or Liverpool are going to win it within the next 5 years. And I think that will be a big enough shock to the sort of money clubs, and United, who are a sort of prestige club and they've got money, you know.
I mean, I guess on the flip side, if Liverpool and Spurs didn't win it in 5 years and then Wolves, you know, land in the top four season after season, it makes that job just even harder, doesn't it, Carl?
Yeah, you can imagine everyone. You can imagine, I think, you know, the Scousers would have a mental breakdown if they didn't, and Wolves came in and suddenly took over, wouldn't they? But yeah, as you say, if a club like that, because they've got this agent, haven't they, as well, who works for them.
He can
get them players that potentially would never look at Wolves in a million years, but suddenly he kind of says, no, you just come with me here for a little while, and, you know, I'll get you a good deal and everything. So while they've got those sort of people inside that club, they probably, I'm agreeing with JS here. I think they're the sort of team that could do the Burnley this year and be up there in, you know, 6th, 7th, and really everyone going, wow, didn't expect this. And if they did that in their first season, then again, if they start backing themselves in the transfer market the following year, then you never know. You could see a team that suddenly, because let's face it as well, they've got the facilities and the fan base to make themselves a big club.
I would like to echo what you said a little while ago, Carl. It's lovely to have a grand old club like Wolves back in the Premier League. Something feels quite right about it.
Yeah, right. It does, doesn't it?
It would be like if Bielsa manages to get Leeds back up, or if Forest somehow can find a way back up. You know, it's nice to sort of have those traditional clubs back in. Quick question for both of you. Is that even a thing, like a club having an agent in the way that Mendes is? Because I can't remember. I mean, is that a different model they've brought over from China or something? Because I've never heard of anything like that before.
I don't think it's, it's more Portuguese sort of based market. So like Benfica, for example, they will have a fluid network of players that will have an agent who has, I don't know, the preferential buying power, and he'll sort of say, let's park them here for a bit with a view to selling them on in a few years' time. Benfica will buy a stake, and then that stake will have an investment return on it should that player then move on. So it's not illegal. It certainly has raised eyebrows from teams in the Football League. Mm-hmm. I remember Leeds, the Leeds chairman, I can't remember his name, the Italian one, he was asking, well, what exactly is the rule? Because I'd like to implement this myself. So it's a grey area.
It's very grey. I don't think, if memory serves me correctly, agents are allowed to be in charge of recruitment. So I'm assuming they've got through a sort of loophole somehow by him technically not being in charge of recruitment in strong inverted commas, and said very sarcastically, you know what I mean, like, because yeah.
he's facilitating the deal, basically, he's picking the best cream of the crop that he can, his clients, he knows who's good, you know.
Robbing people off from... I thought that Sporting Lisbon thing was disgraceful, actually. Yes, the players should have been safe on their own training ground, but for them to just be able to rip up their contracts and then to lose a conservative estimate, at least, what was it, about 8 or 9 of them went in the
That's
end.
Right,
about
yeah.
100, a conservative estimate of probably 150 million quid's worth of talent to a club like Lisbon, that's a monumental blow. And I just don't, something doesn't sit right with me about that. Yes, it was bad for the players, but perhaps they should be paid some sort of token compensatory fee or something, you know?
Well, I guess that's maybe something for the club to take to arbitration, but I think, like you've sort of said, because of the events that went on, it's a very murky situation. And I think Mendes has made light of a very, you know, just rubbing his hands in glee, really, and just picked off the meat off the carcass. And I think,
you do get good agents in football, you know, people who have genuine values, who like to treat their players well and all the rest of it. And then you just get people like Jorge Mendes, who are clearly just doing it for the money, for the status, whatever else. He doesn't give a fuck who he shafts, does he? He really doesn't. And that kind of thing, I don't know, it really sticks in the throat a bit, you know? It's just not right, that kind of thing.
Well, no, it's not. And, you know, you could make a case or probably a whole episode about the amount of money that goes to agents. Mario Raiola, who took about 40-odd million out of the Pogba deal, and you think, that can't be right, can it? You know, sort of super agent like that. You know,
no, that isn't right. I mean, agents do work pretty hard. I mean, probably not Jorge Mendes. He probably just gets all his staff to do it, but he will have worked hard for the players. I mean, I know this because I worked in the music business as a manager for a while, and you are the brunt of all sides, you know what I mean? In music, it's labels and the artists and parents and everything else, and you work 24/7 for 15% or whatever it is of the earnings. And I'm guessing most agents do the same for their players. They act as the liaison to clubs, they broker deals, so they're probably worth that. But they're not worth, like you said, 40 million on a 100 million deal, you know. That's not right. That's more into the 40% plus range, and that's wrong any way you look at it.
Absolutely, absolutely. But we need to move on. There's some other bits to focus on. Carl, Everton have also spent big, and they probably have to be looking at Wolves over their shoulder, because if they spend big again and are then usurped by a team that's got promoted, they'd be thinking, what have we got to do to get into the top six, if ever? But they have put the bulk of their money into Richarlison, who has silenced a couple of people, at least, after a brace of goals at the weekend. It's all very well, you know, starting the weekend and the season off to a flyer, but more importantly, he's got to do that more consistently, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think that was the thing, wasn't it, when he was at Watford? Because I remember a point where Spurs, you know, there was rumours Spurs were looking at him, and you kind of thought, he's one of those players right now where you think he will have a run of 3 or 4 games where he's on fire. And you look at him and think, wow, this guy could be the real deal. But then he'll go quiet for 4 or 5 games, and you actually start thinking, oh, is he a bit of a luxury in a side where, yeah, if he's on fire, he's great to have in the team. If he can start doing doing it regularly and start putting those performances in, then Everton is a stepping stone for him, isn't it? He's done well. He used Watford as a stepping stone. He got his move, and he's probably going to look to do the same with Everton.
Well, so, not necessarily. I mean, I do feel like the Marco Silva connections was probably quite a big thing for him.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, he obviously was getting the best out of him at the start with Watford, wasn't he? So exactly, they obviously worked well together.
Didn't he say he sees him like a father or something?
That's it, yeah. He really likes him. That's
a bond, isn't it? I mean, you look at our lot, like Kane and all the rest of them with Pochettino, and you feel there's probably a similar thing with Marco Silva.
Yeah.
And so maybe we'll start. I suppose it depends how well Silva does and how long he's at Everton for, you know?
Yeah. If he can get some consistency, then he looks like he has all the ability and he's got all the potential to be a really great, you know, great player who's doing good things in the game. It's just consistency now, but no better way to start the season and get boost your confidence, is there?
Absolutely. I mean, unfortunately for another promoted team, Fulham, they got off to the worst start. Everyone was sort of expecting good things from them. I know it's still very early, but they spent a lot of money also, JS. Brought back down to earth after a defeat to Palace. At the same time, Roy Hodgson will be delighted because at least he hasn't got to sort of work with a team that's gone through an awful start to their campaign. So Palace is sort of going from where they left off last season, you know, sort of comfortably mid-table, more from the same from them. And also, more importantly, they kept Wilf Sahar, haven't they?
They have. And obviously, he scored. And yeah, I mean, Schlupp scoring was probably a slight rarity. But yeah, do you know what? I mean, you look at Fulham, they've got in like Chambers and Le Marchand and Seri and, you know, I mean, Sessegnon, they signed Mitrovic and Schürrle. There's no way they're going to struggle. When you look at their team, it's pretty much an entirely new team from last season, you know. Apart from, you know, a couple of obvious ones in Brian and Sessegnon and so on, but that's going to take a little while to gel, isn't it? You know, that will take a while to gel, but when it does, they'll be fine. Palace, yeah, I mean, they'll be fine. I can't see them rocking the world. It depends if Benteke decides to have one of his good seasons. You know, I do like however you pronounce his name. You know, I've never been able to pronounce his name. You know, and they've got some decent defenders. I mean, Patrick Van Aanholt, when he decides to be on it, he looks like one of the best five left backs in the world, doesn't it? It's just he's a bit inconsistent. That's it about Palace, isn't it? They've got a really, really good set of players. They've got the lovely old school 4-4-2 that they play. They play some really attractive football at times. But all their players are really inconsistent, aren't they? You know, pretty much all of them to a man, apart from maybe Tompkins in defence, you know. I mean, they're inconsistent. So it depends. If they can become more consistent, they could easily challenge for Europe again. They could be another one of those teams. But my feeling is they probably won't, and they'll probably finish 12th or 10th or something again, you know?
Truth be told, I don't think any Palace fans would complain with that if you offered that to them right now. So, Cole, Man United-Leicester kicked off the Premier League campaign on Friday night. A relatively routine win for the Red Devils, but it all just seems a little lacklustre, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's certainly an uneasy feeling, isn't there? You know, you almost get the impression you're just waiting for the spark when it all goes horribly wrong and Jose has his third year meltdown. You know, you've got Pogba telling people he can't say what he really wants to say, otherwise he'd be fine. And there's only one way you can take that comment. He clearly wasn't. Mm-hmm. He clearly doesn't want to say something nice about Mourinho, does he? To be honest, United started looking bright, didn't they? But then, I have to say, Leicester played some really good stuff and just lacked that. You know, the shame for them was Vardy wasn't on, because I kind of feel if they'd started Vardy in that game, and his purpose and his directness, they may have had a little bit more joy, because once they got past that first 10, 15 minutes, they started playing some really good football. You know, Maddison had a great game. He looked composed, didn't let the big stage frighten him. And, you know, you kind of started thinking, oh, actually, you know, I know we were showing signs of interest in him, and maybe Leicester have pulled a gem out there. And yeah, I think, you know, United got that second goal, and as soon as they got that goal, it kind of killed it and settled them a little bit. But they just don't look happy and content, do they? You know, the fans, you can tell it's always brewing with the fans, you know. It could turn any minute, you know, if they can see the goal, people are unhappy. Jose doesn't look happy. The mood around the club is a depressive one at the moment. So I don't know where United stand at the moment. They should be one of the teams going for the title, but I kind of feel that at any minute it's chaos is going to start breaking out there. My one worry with that is that if Jose does upset people there enough where he gets the boot, then my worry is who they're going to look at. And for us, I think there's only one man they go for.
I think I agree, and I think Ferguson still has a lot of sway at the club, and he's a massive admirer of Pochettino. I was just wondering, what's going to happen when Man United play Chelsea? Because they both play that 4-4-3, defend and counter and compress. Are they just going to stand there and give the ball to each other on purpose? Because they'll just go into like a weird sort of parallel dimension where they just all freak. They're so confused that they've got no idea what to actually do when they're playing another team that wants to play like that. So,
if that does happen, Sky will still find a way to call it the best game of the season, won't they?
That's right, yeah.
and all set to a dubstep soundtrack.
Absolutely, you know? Absolutely. So, yeah. There we go. A couple more games to whiz through before we wrap things up. JS, Watford got off to a flyer against Brighton at the same time. Do Brighton have to worry about the same issues as Huddersfield? Is it for them a sort of similar scenario where second season syndrome is going to kick in and they'll also be relegated?
Yeah, I mean, I love Chris Heath, and you know, I don't know any Spurs fan that doesn't, to be honest. But I fear for them as well. I mean, I think it's between four clubs realistically. I think Fulham, when they get it all together, will be fine. Like I said, Wolves, not even a question. I think it's going to be Brighton, Cardiff, Huddersfield and Southampton that are going to be in trouble this year. But then I also sort of feel like Mark Hughes will sort of get it together at Southampton, you know. I kind of feel like, yeah, they're another one that are probably going to go down this year. And I know a lot of people haven't liked that because they were my pick. But I fear for them. I don't think they've got enough to stay up in this league this year.
No, I think, to be honest, you're right. They've bought a lot of players, but they're all sort of speculative punts, aren't they? And some might pay off, but you look at that sort of list of ins and you think, well, you know, who are they really and what are they really going to do this season? So I'm happy to be proved wrong, but I just think with the quality of teams that have come up and the money they've spent and everything, it's, like I say, making their job harder. I mean, I've written in my notes teams to go down: Huddersfield, Brighton, Cardiff. So you've almost sort of matched me like for like. Cardiff lost to Bournemouth.
I mean, sorry, can I just say, it'd be a massive shame if they do go down, not least because they've got probably the best cumulative names in the whole of the Premier League. You know, it's like Knockhart, Proper, March, Dunk, Gross and Bong.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what a fucking brilliant team for great names, you know.
Yes. So,
what would we do without Bong and, you know, Gross and Proper?
They are great footballing names. They are from a real vintage classic pantheon of great footballing names. But Carl,
this is the deep level of analysis you got me on for.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. You know, we don't want to mimic everyone else. You know, we can go to other podcasts and talk about, you know, flat back threes and tiki taka as much as you like. But this is what we're really getting the guests in for: your favourite footballers' names. And if you've got a favourite footballer's name,
exactly,
just tweet me and I'll read them out next week. I could do an hour of those. Honestly, I really don't mind. So That could be an international week show where I just read out funny footballers' names. So it might happen, it might not. But Carl, quickly, the Vitality Stadium saw Bournemouth take on Cardiff. Relatively easy for Bournemouth. Could have been even easier had Callum Wilson scored the first half penalty. For you, Cardiff, they've sort of bought players of, you know, championship quality from last season. It's going to be a long season for them, isn't it?
Oh, massively, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, you can't see much joy. But I guess what they've done there, isn't it, is what they've done is they've brought players with the inevitability that they may just drop. And their view is they're going to set themselves up for another run. And, you know, they'll try to be one of those sides who may come up, go down, but then come back up again and try to sort of build that way. But this year for them, that is a long season coming, because I think there's going to be some heavy defeats in this season for them. But I'm sure they'll enjoy it. You know, they'll give it a go. When you got Warnock on the side, you know that they're going to be entertaining, aren't they?
Bless you. I agree they're going down.
Can you see Warnock lasting the season? Because he's excellent at getting teams out of the Championship. It's when he actually arrives in the Premier League, it's like, actually, yeah, this job's a bit harder than I thought. So can you see him getting sacked and then doing this repeat cycle at another Championship club? Or will it see him being sacked and he finally calls it a day? What can you see?
I guess it depends how bad it is for them, doesn't it? If they're doing kind of where they're not getting embarrassed week after week, then they may give him a little run. But if they start now being on the end of some real heavy drubbins week after week, then those guys may say, well, we're going to try and bring someone else in now and freshen this up. But I love the bloke. We're watching him on the sideline. They should just have the camera on him for the Cardiff games. You know, don't worry about what's happening. You know, put the little square in the corner of the pitch and we'll just have the main image on Warnock, because that is old school manager, isn't it, who wants to fight everyone on the sideline and he'll happily give the ref some verbal. But
I agree. And he looks like an actual season. He looks like an actual crow as well, which is really cool.
There aren't
now Martinez is at Belgium.
That's true. So maybe text in your favourite crow based managers as well.
or just general equine ones.
Yeah, just anything really. It's an open church. I don't mind. Just a final few bits to get through before we wrap up things then. Not a lot of Spurs chat on this pod. There is a reason behind that, because I also host the eSpurs podcast in the week, so I don't really want to duplicate that. So if you want to listen to more Spurs discussion, myself, Carl and another guest spoke all things stadium and Newcastle last night, so that should be out in the week. To do so, you can visit a Twitter account, which is @E_Spurs. Southampton Burnley sort of just happened, didn't it? It was 0-0. That was always going to be nil that game, wasn't it? I mean, Burnley coming off the back of a first ever European, well, actually not the first ever European expedition, but a trip to Turkey, a nice jolly in midweek, and they just sort of looked leggy from what I saw. So that's it, really. I did say there was going to be transfer chat, but we ran out of time. So some players have moved and some players have stayed. That wraps up. And
that's transfers.
That's it. Brilliant. Yeah, in brackets, not Spurs. So really, from here, I just need to thank my guests. It's been an absolute pleasure once more. Cole, thanks ever so much for being on the show tonight.
Cheers, Dan. Pleasure, mate.
Not a problem. And JS, the same to you, mate.
Thank you very much for having me, Dan.
Not a problem. I hope we'll do it all again soon. So, it just leaves me to say, my name's Dan Tracy. This is The Real Football Cast. Until next time, goodbye.